Off the Ball. GAA.
The greatest of all of them, of chaos-based team games, is as soon as you're able to let go of winning, you create the conditions to win.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Good evening and welcome along to Monday Night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock this evening. So fair to say it was a brilliant weekend for Rory McIlroy. Also fair to say it was a terrible day yesterday for the Ireland women's rugby team. And then the question that's going to be the big question tonight is, was it a good weekend or a bad weekend or a middling weekend for the Republic of Ireland national football team? We're going to be speaking to Kevin Kilbane from 9 o'clock on tonight's football show. We're also going to be hearing from Stephen Doyle that hour, who is in Yerevan right now ahead of tomorrow night's clash with Armenia. In the middle hour tonight, we're going to be speaking to Jenny Murphy and Sene Naopu on Ireland taking a bit of a hammering at the hands of the Black Ferns yesterday at the World Cup. And also Luke Jensen will be with us before 9 o'clock to look back on US Open finals weekend. We will kick things off from 7:30 though by hearing from Rory McIlroy himself. We'll also get analysis from Paul McGinley. Our number is 0879 180 180 if you want to drop us a WhatsApp message. Will O'Callaghan is delivering the news round very shortly. Will, how are you?
Evening, chaps. Can it not be a case of like some good, some bad, and the excitement of a late goal, but you have to accept the first 30 minutes were horrific?
That might actually be the truth of the whole thing. That's why we're confused as Ireland football fans today. Michael McCarthy is here in studio. How are you, Mick?
I'm all right.
Of course, the beginning of the NFL season comes at just the right time because the madness of the summer sports schedule subsides. You know, the golf majors are finished. Intercounty GAA is gone. The Premier League is back and we're back into the rhythm, and there's a boring international break and there's, you know, no major rugby tournament. But this year, the 7 hours of NFL Red Zone comes to you at the end of an absolute mammoth weekend of sport.
I know, yeah. Or even in the middle, like we're still on, I think 6 o'clock came and went that we were into the second playoff hole. You're like, oh, just win it, Rory. You know, because you forget, you almost think back of the moment on the 18th as the end of the tournament, you know. We had to watch two playoff holes. Was it three playoff holes?
Three playoff holes,
of course. Yeah. Before we got to the end. But unbelievable weekend, really. And then, yeah, topped off. I could have done without the US Open final and this unbelievable performance by Alcaraz. Like, honestly, I might be exaggerating and I'm watching it on a tablet, not on TV because I'm watching the NFL, but like nearly the best tennis I think I've ever seen a person play. I could have done with that being last week. Why are the US Open? Is it one of those things that they think they're above it or whatever? Why in America of all places are they not scheduling the US Open for the week before the NFL comes back and takes over that country and more the world? Like, I've listened to American podcasts today where the tennis wasn't even mentioned.
Is it maybe because tennis is a truly global sport and is not at the behest of the US sports machine?
I'd say now if the US sports machine and the broadcast holders in America put their foot down and, you know, Flushing Meadows decided we're only available on this week, then the ATP and so on would follow.
Yeah, I did like when it came to the broadcast as well.
Fair question, though.
That Sky particularly ran out of road very quickly when it was delayed by the best part of an hour. So clearly they had everything set up. They're going to be going out in court around 7 o'clock. We'll just call it as we see it for the first 15 minutes of the coverage. We've got a couple of video packages ready. Not too much cover, though. And next thing, Donald Trump turns up and the security situation changes entirely. And after about 20 minutes and after they'd shown Jason Bell hitting a few tennis shots and stuff, they went, right, we might be out of tape here. Yeah. We're going to just go out and talk to fans. And I think quite a few of the supporters, bizarrely, were finding out what was happening when they were live on TV.
Right.
Because I think most of them were not aware of the reason that the security was taking so long for them to get through. And even by the time that Sinner and Alcaraz, because it all happened really quickly when they actually got out in court, quite a few fans were still outside. And some had paid thousands of dollars to beat Arthur Ashe last night. So you can imagine how they felt when they couldn't get in.
Yeah, it's that's absolutely mental. Also, it became increasingly apparent as the broadcast went on that Sky Sports were doing this whole thing off tube, which because of the delay to Laura Robson, who was sitting courtside last night, which is just a bit of a giveaway when you are back in the UK commentating on a Grand Slam.
If anybody watched England and Andorra at any point over the weekend,
didn't quite get around to that.
Well, it was a couple of minutes that I watched from Villa Park, and some off tube issues.
Okay,
as in we kept getting crowd noise for like 5 seconds, and then it would disappear for 15, and then it would come back again for 5. Meanwhile, the commentary was just going through all the way.
What we'll do is we'll get straight into the news round, because we do want to talk about the golf yesterday. And the news round is with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate, or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. So, Rory McIlroy savouring his second Irish Open victory. Will
he is on? I mean, he's talked about his National Open all week. He says it was a sensational eagle putt on the final hole, probably one of the biggest moments of his career. The world number two went on to beat Sweden's Joachim Lagergren on a third playoff hole at the K Club, which was the scene of his first win at the Irish Open 9 years ago. Shane Lowry continued his preparations as well for the Ryder Cup by finishing inside the top 20 on 7 under par. He told Nathan he wasn't happy with all of his play at the weekend, but he felt there were some good elements as well.
Never hole like a 10-footer early on, or like a put when I needed it to kind of get build a bit of momentum and get going, and you know, get the crowd behind me. I just felt like a little flat at times, where I was playing nice but not scoring as well, and you kind of felt like I was playing catch up to the leaders and the guys on the top of the leaderboard all week. And but I do feel like, you know, standing there at the end of the week, like 700 is by far the worst score I could have shot this week. You know, I scored pretty badly, even, you know, when I missed couple of par fives. When you think about it throughout the week, you know, missed them in the wrong spots and didn't get them up and down, and it's just little things like that make a big difference in your score at the end of the week. And but yeah, there's still a lot of positives to take from it. I played really nicely, and you know, I feel like I go to Wentworth next week now with a little bit of a spring in my step with how I'm driving the golf ball. And you know, you need to drive it well around there, and if I can continue that on, I'll do all right.
There are a couple of things that crop up from time to time that expose me as a complete hypocrite, and watching this yesterday was one of those moments when Joachim Lagergren on the final hole of the playoff, what would end up being the final hole of the playoff, hits the water and the entire K Club erupts, and I, as an Irish sports fan, erupt with emotion as well. I, the same person who judges and sneers at the American sports fans when they are hosting Team Europe, or even at the US Open last year when there were chants of USA, USA around the green when Rory McIlroy was melting down. I despise those people, but I think it's totally acceptable for us to cheer when a Swede's ball hits the water.
You're so right as well, because I was like, over the course of, like, especially when it looked like he was going to win, and he had an amazing eagle on 16, like one of the best shots you'll ever see in to a hole on 16, and as it looks like he's going to win as he's playing the next two holes, and you know, you don't think Rory's going to get an eagle, because everyone who needs an eagle on the 18 never gets it. You know, it's just one of those things, you just hope it remains hopeful, but never happens. And they're thinking, this is an amazing story, this guy, like, he's 33, this is our, like, biggest check of his career, it's just such a massive win, puts him on the map. And not only that, but he's gone and won it. He's not just like last man standing. He's come from nowhere. He's had a great round. He had that eagle. He's gone and won it. And then even through the playoff, you're kind of trying to convince yourself, you know, it's like, this guy is standing, he's never done really much in his golf career, and he's standing here toe to toe with Rory McIlroy, and he's inside, and he's playing as, he hasn't missed a step. He's hitting, all of his shots have been perfect or whatever. And then he's into the water. Like, yeah. Totally betray yourself. And you're sort of like, oh no, I have a more holistic view of these things. Absolutely. Yeah, than just pure nationality.
A real, are we the baddies moment when that ball hits the water?
But when the eagle went in, I've never seen an explosion like that.
It was that loud.
Yeah. But it happened like, so in the house, we were like that. And then you kind of realize that what you're looking, and then you kind of look back down and you're sort of seeing like a football crowd react to a last minute winner. Like it was that sort of, it was those kind of limbs. You don't see limbs like that in golf, you know, no matter what kind of excitement there is. And it was a real unique moment. It was class.
There was a reverse angle replay just after the 18th, you know, before they went to the playoff. And it was like a young boy who was right on the fringe of the green, jumping up and down with his dad.
Yeah,
like, that was the type of celebration, which was like really wholesome and lovely. And I actually really enjoyed that McIlroy cared about this week a lot, because he has done a lot for the Irish Open. Like, he helped previously to get a sponsor, to get players to come across and play. This clearly means a lot to him. I think going back to the K Club after that victory in 2016, it felt like the last week meant a lot too. Even getting the permission to wear the green jacket and to be able to wear it in on Thursday, which he didn't have to do, but he felt he had to because he'd worn it at Royal Portrush as well. Everyone was cheering for him. And because he went 5 shots behind as well, it is the perfect story. That was like such a mad final day. Even from like Rafa Cabrera-Bao's hole in one on the third hole early in the day, and you're thinking, right, how is this going to finish? There's eight or nine players who realistically could win, and then McIlroy just emerges from the pack. And I had no doubt when he went down the playoff, as well as Lagergrim was playing, that McIlroy was definitely going to win.
Good point here by Barry on the text machine. He says that putt at the 13th really was the writing on the wall that it was going to be Rory's day.
Yeah, fabulous.
We were just talking about that during the news. I don't think I've ever seen a putt like that go in before where it circles the hole. We've all seen them circle the hole and fall in, but I've never seen it move away from the hole and then fall back in. And like, it was actually, it was so unique. It was absolutely bizarre. But it was, yeah, it felt like he put it so well. That was probably his worst putt of the day.
Yeah.
He held some brilliant pars. Like,
if that was that phrase, defying gravity, is the one turned around, but this one seemed to pay too much respect to gravity. Like the fact that it actually did drop after. I've never seen a
second. I was supposed to go into that hole.
Yeah. Yeah, it was absolutely insane. And also, like, I mean, you're so right. The other storylines that were happening on the final day, like Pereira Bayo almost got a second hole in one. Yeah. I think he played the first two par threes in three strokes, which was extraordinary. There were so many different things happening. Your man at Algo, when, you know, most people do the club twirl at one stage, he did the full basketball follow through with his right hand. It was phenomenal. There was loads happening, and those scenes on the 18th are going to be hard to forget for quite some time. So more on this from 7:30. Paul McGinley will join us. We'll hear from Rory McIlroy, who was speaking to Nathan after his second Irish Open win yesterday as well. On the football front, though, Will, we've got some injury news from the Republic of Ireland camp.
Yeah, I suppose the good news, no fresh injury concerns after the weekend ahead of tomorrow's game in Yerevan. They were training earlier today, understandably, because it's remarkably hot there. As you might remember, two campaigns ago, Ireland went over there and played on a Saturday afternoon. It was mega hot. It looks like it's going to be above 30 degrees for tomorrow as well. So Shamrock Rovers' Josh Honan coming into the squad yesterday, he's going to cover the fullback positions after the withdrawal of Sammy Smodix, who picked up an injury during the 2-2 game against Hungary on Saturday at the Aviva Stadium. Hallgrimsson said earlier today at his press conference he wants the team to carry in the second half performance from Hungary into tomorrow's match.
We will obviously address some of the things that we didn't do well, but from, let's say, 30th minute, I think we more or less controlled the game. Gained a good rhythm that increased until the end. Obviously, going one man up was helpful. But still, you've seen so many games where a team goes one man down and you don't see it. But it really was there to be seen that we took the control, put them under pressure. Yeah, created a lot of good opportunities that we should have done better with. But it's a better problem to solve not scoring for many chances than not creating chances. So that's a little bit easier. But no, really good effort, really good character. That's what we take from this game and bring it into this one. If we can keep on playing like we did from minute 30, I would be happy. Whatever the result now, I would be happy if the same mentality is and the same enthusiasm and character.
Yeah, we're going to try and take the temperature on this throughout this evening's show, because I'd imagine there's a lot of varying opinions on how positive we should be after Saturday. Kieran and Meath has been in touch to say, incredible atmosphere at the stadium, awful start, but the team showed great heart and fight to get back into it. Centre midfield and left back is a real issue for this Ireland team, though. Ryan Manning was excellent. Matt Doherty and Jason Knight would be lucky to keep their places for tomorrow. So a real genuine sense of support, while also an idea that there is scepticism around a number of positions in this team.
Yeah, I thought Jason Knight was okay, I have to say, especially in the second half. But I guess the problem is that him and Cullen together,
too similar,
probably just doesn't feel like a robust enough midfield or quick enough midfield, and certainly not a progressive enough on the ball midfield. And look, that's an issue. I would love to see this team not concede in the first half or play from ahead. We've never seen it in the entire time of the manager. I feel like it would be well suited for it. You see, the one thing you take from Saturday is that, you know, they fell into this awful situation. Everything we dreaded about what could happen happened. You're 2-0 down. The World Cup feels over after 15 minutes. The crowd are absolutely flat despite the early atmosphere at a full house. And they kicked on and they cared. And I know that sounds like the most minimal thing you could ask for, and it is, but it's also something that we need to see. And I think, you know, there's an element of the 75-minute performance that followed of possibly building something as this group, and they believed in it and they felt, but like, we're not a good team at chasing. You know, it's like, we're not creative. We're not going to be able to play well against a low block. It's going to struggle. We're going to struggle to beat Armenia home and away. We're going to struggle to beat all the poor teams. That's how we are. But can we live with the likes of Hungary and Portugal? If we have a result to defend, I think we could be good on the break. I think that's how we Ireland could even create chances. And we've just never seen it. I don't know how we're going to do it, because it hasn't happened yet that we have managed to in any way shut up shop or stop the first chance against the scoring. Do you remember I had that stat last year about Villa kept, it was this mad stat that Villa kept conceding on the first shot or the first chance that the opposition had. It feels like Ireland have been doing this for 5 years now. It just has to stop, and then we'll almost see what we're made of, you know?
But the problem is, you could argue this was the worst start of the lot.
Yeah,
and it could have been doubly bad come half-time as well. Like, as I said, we'll be talking to Kevin Kilbane about this later on, and I might put this point to him, but... off the ball in Hungary, which has just gone live, obviously. What are they saying about Roland Salai right now and that sending off and being 2-0 up in the first half and their attackers missing two gilt-edged opportunities to go 3 or 4-0 up in Dublin and a guaranteed 3 points to potentially push them on to a first World Cup qualification in however long.
1986.
Imagine how they're feeling today. Like, that's the one thing that gives me hope. It's kind of like, there can't be a complete vacuum of hope. There has to be, you know, like 60% Hungarian hope, 40% Ireland hope. And as a result of the way in which the game ended and the trajectory of the game, I think we can take something from that. It's still just 1 point. But if we had been 2-0 up and conceded two late goals and we were the team who had a man sent off, I think we'd feel a hell of a lot worse about this.
The Hungarian reaction is kind of strange. So obviously we've all heard the Haugesen quote responding to Rossi, who had gone in just before him in the press room, where he said if he's pissed off, he's just pissed if he thinks that. About the decisions that the referee was making during the game. Szoboszlai said he would have taken a point with both hands before the game from playing against Ireland, which to me seems weird, where Hungary are ranked quite a bit above and have gone to the last 4 Euros. And there's this feeling that they've got a really good generation of players right now, and yet they seem to think that we're this really difficult team to play against. Look, maybe Hungary will feel that they can do enough in Budapest to finish second in the group. Everyone expects the Portugal are just going to clean everyone else out. Maybe that's enough for Hungary. But maybe they just paid us a little bit too much respect, because they were feigning injury and they were slowing the game down even when they were 1-0 up.
That was
bizarre.
Yeah, I hadn't actually heard those Szoboszlai quotes.
Yeah, he said it before the game as well. Yeah, so I don't know if it was just that was the mentality that they had in some ways of like keeping things positive. It's a long World Cup campaign. I don't know. I think they came out to win the game and will be devastated that they didn't win it in reality. You know, you probably just say things. But like, I just don't understand how... going back to your original point about the red card, like, what a game changer. Like, just a moment of total red mist. Like, completely idiotic. But the referee in general just didn't seem to have any control of the game. Like, Will's point about the time wasting and all of that. Like, I really do feel, at some point, does football not, like, want to, you know, make itself more enjoyable to watch? Maybe people like the kind of crazy tension of the time wasting and all of that. Like, and maybe that's fun in itself and it adds to the drama and the occasion.
If the ref flashed the yellows early, it was done.
But it just, the goalkeeper stopped taking the kickouts, which was the most ingenious way I've ever seen of not getting a second yellow card. In fairness to Hungary, I have to give him that one. That was actually very clever. I haven't seen him do that. But even throws and everything was taken 2 or 3 minutes. I just feel like it's a very easy thing to sort, but there's never been an effort by football authorities in a general way to actually do it.
Yeah, it's a fair point.
And, you know, a referee should almost have a subjective attitude towards, I'm deeming this time wasting. Stop the clock.
It's particularly flagrant when it's happening against your own team.
That's the only one we care about.
It was the worst time wasting ever seen.
At one point, he stopped the game to go and book a Hungarian player. And I was actually watching him, and he stopped Ireland taking the free kick so that he could write down the name. And I watched him. He never looked at his watch one time during the entire process. So he actually slowed the game down to try and stop time wasting.
But it kind of strangely backfired on Hungary as well. Because it reignited the Irish fans at the time when they were 2-0 down. Like, so this wonderful atmosphere right up until the point of the start of the game, 90 seconds in, it gets the balloon into all the air is out. And next thing, when Ireland go 2-0 down, the place falls pretty silent. And next thing, everyone just starts to get aggrieved about the goalkeeper not kicking out the ball or defenders going down clutching their face. And it seemed to just get the crowd back up again, which was, again, bizarre decision.
Nathan Collins has an awful tendency to look for penalties when there's definitely not a penalty and then run back. You watch him, he does it for Brentford all the time, runs back to the halfway line shaking his head with his arms out as if like I've been done horribly here. Does he not know that VAR exists and that possibly referees, especially in club level, you know, when he's got the same referees all the time, watch back games that they've been in and we'll see that he's totally lying to them.
Listen, Nathan. It's all about painting the picture.
Smarter.
You are continuing with a couple of more football stories here, Will.
Yeah, Scotland continue their bid to qualify for a first World Cup since 1998. Later, Steve Clark's team take on Belarus. That game is in front of an empty stadium in Budapest because Belarus can't host games at the moment. That's after opening with a 0-0 draw, which is a very good result for them in Copenhagen on Friday. Adam Ida has also been speaking about the end of his time at Celtic. He says he endured hate and torture while he was trying to win over his critics at the club. The Republic of Ireland striker left the Scottish Champions to join Swansea on deadline day after 18 months at the Hoops. Ida says he was proud of his time at Parkhead but admits that he got a lot of hate after some poor performances. Andrew Onana on his way to Turkey as well. A deal reached this evening for him to go on loan to Trabzonspor. At Lone Town as well, so they were rocked yesterday by the resignation of their manager Colin Fortune just ahead of their Europa Cup campaign. The Women's National League champions say they were disappointed that he opted to step down. At Lone, 4 points clear at the top of the table after their win at the weekend against Shamrock Rovers. They play Glasgow City away from home on Wednesday, the first leg of their opening round game in the new Europa Cup. And he has been speaking to the Westmeath Independent in the last couple of hours, a very lengthy interview. But the crux of it, if I can summarise, is that he felt he was entirely undermined by the new owners and the new executive at the club. He said after they had played their Champions League qualifiers, a member of the executive was looking to come onto his coaching team. And he was also pointing out that the men's manager has been handed a 2-year contract. He's in there getting them into European competition and he's sitting on a deal just at the end of the season. So Colin Fortune felt that he had no option but to leave. But such terrible timing to be leaving 3 days out from Europe.
Sounds like a fairly bizarre set of circumstances there. Good/bad news for Tottenham here, depending on your point of view?
Depending on whether Tottenham are kind of playing the game to try and attract more interest in. Yeah. But the former Newcastle joint owner, Amanda Staveley, confirmed today she does not intend to make an offer to buy Tottenham. Her PCP, International Finance Group, has been forced to clarify their interest in bidding for Spurs following the chairman, Daniel Levy's, unexpected exit from his role last week. In a statement this afternoon, then, Tottenham said their owners have unequivocally rejected two expressions of interest in the club recently, and they insist they're not for sale.
On Manchester City then?
Yeah, well, this is a long-running case with the Premier League, which is over sponsorship rules. They've settled the dispute, which means that City have dropped their challenge against it and say they'll accept that regulations are valid and binding. New guidelines which are designed to prevent clubs from signing inflated deals with themselves effectively or companies that are linked to their owners were undermining financial rules. So City have accepted the rules going forward.
And of course, this is separate to the 115 charges, which... Yeah. We still wait a result for. Now on the rugby, Scott Beamon has been speaking.
He has. He's hopeful he'll have all of his players available for the Women's Rugby World Cup quarterfinal against France. Stacey Flood emerged as the main injury concern, went off in a protective boot after the 40-0 defeat against New Zealand in Brighton. There also are hopes within the camp that Aoife Wafer will be fit to play. She hasn't got any minutes to the tournament so far as she continues to return to action after her knee surgery. She did take part in the warm-up yesterday. Beamon said after the game, despite the heavy loss, his players will relish the preparations for Sunday's game against France.
If you look over the last 2 weeks, we've actually been pretty clinical in terms of getting into the score zone and coming up with points. Clearly a different challenge against New Zealand in terms of type of athlete, type of player they've got, the physicality they bring. So look, the fact we're getting in there and creating momentum and getting opportunities to get in will be something that we'll be looking at and going, okay, well, we understand we need to do more of that again against another World Cup contender next week. Just need to be a little bit smarter in terms of how we get over the whitewash when those opportunities come.
And in terms of the score, is it quite easy just to draw a line with that, say, please forget that, it's gone and we're on to the next one now?
I think, well, if you look at right to the last, was it 75th, 74th, 75th, and it's 26, and some of those have come off the back of our errors, which have created an opportunity for them to get in. So I think there's a lot of positive stuff that we can go out from this. There's clearly some bits that we want to tidy up on if we're going to go against World Cup contenders, and next week quarterfinal brings a life all to itself where there's no second chances now. So we're going to freshen up this week and get our best game out there next week.
Yeah, more on this after 8 o'clock with Sene and Jenny reflecting on that and how Ireland managed to get themselves back up into a good headspace for their World Cup quarterfinal this weekend. But well, before you wrap up, you might run us through the rest of today's news.
Yeah, well, the US Open tennis champion Carlos Alcaraz admits his Wimbledon final defeat to Jannik Sinner helped inspire him to success in the rematch last night. The Spaniard produced a brilliant performance in New York to win his sixth Grand Slam. He also reclaimed the world number one spot as well. The match at Flushing Meadows was delayed because of additional security checks due to the attendance of President Donald Trump. The champions Dublin very much leading the way in the list of nominations for the Ladies Football All-Stars, 12 nominees of the 45. The finalists Meath are next in line with 10. while the National League champions Kerry have 7. And Ballygunner, sent to Mick this week, came in 12 consecutive Waterford senior hurling titles. Bárc Mahony scored 11 points. He won his 13th medal in Waterford yesterday. They overcame Mount Sion by 22 points in the final. Desi Hutchinson with 1-6 from play. Ballygunner are now unbeaten in 66 games in the Waterford Championship. And they will, as things stand, have 2 teams at senior next year because they won the second competition as well.
It's just worth noting that this is like, other than maybe Cross MacLean, like this is a tier one hurling county. You know what I mean? And I know they have had a few struggles in recent years and all, but you're talking about like a strong lot of clubs from all around the place. To win 12 in a row is just beyond phenomenal. Like, it's unprecedented.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think they won even 2 competitions at some of the underage grades this year as well. So it's not like the Ballygunner machine is about to end with this group of players that won in All-Ireland. It looks like they're going to steamroll for years.
Right. Shane, by the way, has been in touch. Hi, lads. I'd love to get your take on Kerry FC making it to the quarterfinals of the Cup only a few years after they came back into existence. It looks like things are starting to click under Colin Healy. Are we all up for European football in Tralee next year? A real Hollywood story. 0879 180 180 is our number. Emma making the point that on her Insta, Ask Me Anything over the weekend, Denise O'Sullivan said Healy was the best coach she's worked with. So it's a FAI Cup quarterfinals this weekend. They're at home to Sligo Rovers. It would be absolutely insane if they were to get to the semi-final or potentially beyond this year. So that is your Monday evening news round. Loads still to come between now and 10 o'clock this evening. Next up, we're going to be hearing from Rory McIlroy, and Paul McGinley is going to break down an incredible weekend at the K-Club.
The news round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Off the Ball. GAA.
The greatest of all of them, of chaos-based team games, is as soon as you're able to let go of winning, you create conditions to win.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.